In the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, and beginning with the 13th verse, Solomon says, "I set my heart to seek and search out wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This is a burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. I commune with my heart, saying, 'Look, I have attained greatness, and I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem.' My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also grasping for the wind, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." One secular writer has said about the book of Ecclesiastes that is the journal of a desperate journey. I suppose to some degree that may be the case until we reach the conclusion. Some have described it as Solomon's experiment of life, the search for success or the search for happiness in life. Perhaps that is a fair assessment of the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, nonetheless, he begins with a very dismal picture, rather disheartening when we begin to read in the first chapter. He talks about the fact that life isn't fair, that the crooked places cannot be made straight, and the things that are lacking, he says, cannot be numbered. Turn with me to the 9th chapter. Because in the 9th chapter, we see the same picture in the 11th verse beginning. Chapter 9 and verse 11. Solomon says, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, that it seemed great to me that there was a little city with few men in it. And a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city, yet no one remembered that same poor man. And then I said, 'Wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard.'" And then we learn again that life is not fair. That here was a poor wise man that delivered a city, and yet no one remembered him. I suppose I learned that lesson at a very young age when I was in elementary school. And one day on the playground, the coach, the PE teacher, sent us off to the back 40, divided us into two teams and said, "Okay, boys, I want you to go play touch football." And so on one play on my team, the guy that went back was playing quarterback went back to pass, and I was wide open. And so he threw me the ball, and I caught it, and I ran for a touchdown, no one covering me. And when I got back to the crowd, got back to the huddle, I was very proud of what I had accomplished. And one fellow on the other team said, "Play over. You guys were offsides. This isn't going to work." Well, then started a little scuffle, you know, between the two. Until finally the quarterback of our team said, "Yeah, you guys are right. We're going to have to plow the play over. After all, we know that George can't catch a football." Now, I had my feelings hurt, but I've gotten over that a long time ago. But what I did learn at a very young age of life is that life isn't fair. Perhaps you've heard the phrase, "All men were created equal." We as Americans understand that phrase. But does it really mean what some men want to make it say? Not really. What is it that we have in common, all men? Basically and fundamentally, that we're human beings. But the reality is that all of us are somewhat different. I have a niece, or Nancy has a niece, that has two twin boys. And yet there are a lot of things different between William and Kirby. A lot of things. Two very different individuals in many ways, though coming from a common mother and father. And the fact is that there are some who seem to be a little more talented than others. Back when I was in school, I loved to play the trombone. And so I played the horn from 8th grade all the way through college. But I marvel sometimes at those who have really mastered the instrument. And maybe it was that I didn't put enough effort into it. But the reality is that there were some who are a little more talented in that area than I was. And so what I say is that, well, you know, life just isn't fair. You remember Ann Richards, the political speech, he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. What does she mean by that? What was the implication? Well, she said of George Booth, he was born with a silver spoon in the mouth, that the implication was that life isn't fair, that, you know, he's given an advantage that most people haven't been given. But the fact is that most people born in America were born with a silver spoon in their mouth. If you don't believe it, then come go with me to Jamaica. But that's not true of all Americans. Ask Randy Nelson, whose lifetime dream was to play college at the play hockey at the collegiate level. But in the second game of his collegiate career, he crashed into the boards and became a quadriplegic. Thus, life isn't fair. Isn't that true in our work? I was telling Steve and Pat back home, we've had a problem that's been actually in the neighborhood for more than 20 years, a road that was deteriorating to the point that I would rather drive on the road to Jamaica than even come to my own house. And so some of us decided that we wanted to solve the problem, and so we formed a homeowners association. But you know what I found out through that? There are four or five guys that are really willing to do the work. There are 25 neighbors that want an answer, but they don't want to get involved. Isn't that true of anything? You dads that have ever been the coach of a soccer team or maybe on the board of a little league baseball league would understand exactly what I'm talking about. A few that want to do the work, many that want a solution, but only a few willing to do the work. And unfortunately, that is at times true even in local churches. That's true of local churches, sadly to say. And so what do we say? We say that life isn't fair. But we add to the complexity of that the fact that in this world there is the law of sowing and reaping. Hosea recognized that. He says, "Sow for yourself righteousness, reap in mercy, break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord till He comes and rain righteousness on you. You have plowed wickedness and you've reaped iniquity. You have eaten the fruit of lies because you trusted in your own way in the multitude of your mighty men." And actually, Paul kind of implies that in the same context in the book of Galatians, the 6th chapter, when he says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will the Spirit reap life everlasting." There is in this world the concept of sowing and reaping. And so we add to the complexity of life by the sin that we commit and the consequences that come from that sin. Look in 2 Samuel, the 12th chapter, with me for a minute. 2 Samuel chapter 12. You remember the story of David and Bathsheba, and that David committed adultery with Bathsheba. One sin led to another, to lie and deception and murder. And now Nathan the prophet is having to confront David because of his sin. And in 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 9, Nathan says, "Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in His sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword. You have taken his wife to be your wife. And you have killed him with the sword of the people of Amnon. Now therefore the sword will never depart from your house because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife." And yes, even though David was brought back into a right relationship with God, the fact is that much of the rest of his life is tragic because of the bad choices that he made and the sin committed. And you think life is fair? What about Uriah? And what happened to him? And what about the child that was born of David and Bathsheba that died? You think life is fair? And what about the children that are born into an abusive relationship? Maybe an alcoholic father or a mother that's a drug addict. Or what about the children that suffer the consequences of a broken marriage, not any of to their doing or making? Or what about a young girl killed on a highway because someone just tried to mix alcohol and a vehicle? I know a young man who is now a faithful Christian who in his college years got involved with the wrong kind of people and took the life of a girl on a highway because he tried to put alcohol and a vehicle together, and he learned the hard way that it didn't work. Now that young man has reconciled himself and his relationship with God, thankfully. But there are things that he will have to live with for the rest of his life. The consequences of the fact that he sowed to the wind and reaped the whirlwind. And so, we add to the complexity of life the sin we commit. And then you add to that the activity of the devil. You remember the story of Job? In Job chapter 1, where there was an interview between Job and God, or God and Satan with regard to Job. And Satan implicates some things about the very character of Job and about the very character of God. And thus Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands and possessions and increased in the land, but now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And so God allows Satan to afflict this man, this righteous man. In all of this, Job did not sin nor charge God foolishly. In fact, Job has everything removed from him except a wonderful wife, tongue in cheek, and his life. And the fact is that there are some things that simply happen in this world that seem to be inexplicable. Even David in the 73rd Psalm struggled with it. He said, "I was envious when I considered the boastful and the prosperity of the righteous." And so there are some things that we just sort of scratch our head and we don't understand, we can't figure out. And so we say, you know, life isn't fair. There are just a lot of inequities here in this world. That life is very discouraging. And so in the book of Judges, the 6th chapter, we might say, well, Israel was getting what they had coming. I mean, after all, they had rebelled against God. And God would deliver a judge and bring up a judge and finally deliver them. And Gideon say to him, "Oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all His miracles which our fathers have told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midians. Why has this happened to us?" Well, if I stop here, you're probably going to be pretty discouraged. It's kind of like one lady said back home, the real completion of a sermon is not only to present a problem, but try to offer an answer. And so we say, well, life isn't fair. And that's true. Life isn't fair, but God is. Life isn't fair, but God is fair. In fact, the psalmist says in Psalm 145 and verse 17, Psalm 145 and verse 17, "The Lord is righteous in all His ways and gracious in all His works." The Lord is righteous in all His ways and gracious in all His works. Psalm 145 and verse 17. So life isn't fair, but God is. And therefore, God remembers when others don't remember. Look in the book of Hebrews, the 6th chapter, and look in Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 10. Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 10. Here were a people that were being challenged to go back under the old law. Some of them persecuted because of their faith. Some of them having witnessed that some of their Jewish brethren had indeed left the faith. Thus the Hebrew writer leaves him with this encouraging word. He says, "For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward His name in that you have ministered to the saints and do minister." And so sometime we begin to have our little pity party and we say, "Well, you know, I did this and nobody noticed. Why, I went to all this trouble and all this work to warm up a can of corn or whatever it is and took it over and not even a thank you note. Not even a thank you note or any kind of word of appreciation." The fact is that, like I said this morning, we like compliments. We want to be complimented. In fact, there's nothing wrong with that. I look in the Hebrew letter of all the heroes of faith that are mentioned by God in His Word. In the book of Romans, the 16th chapter, where Paul lists a number of heroes of faith. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I don't mean flattery, but there's nothing wrong with that. That is to the glory of God. But here someone says, "Well, you know, nobody noticed me." You know that poor wise man that delivered the city? Nobody noticed but God. But God remembered him. In fact, remembered him enough to acknowledge him in His Word. And therefore, God never forgets our work and our labor of love. Whatever deed of kindness it may be, whether it's sharing a tract with someone, with a friend, whether it's a phone call or a card or a note of thanks, or a note of encouragement, a firm handshake, a friendly smile, whatever it is, God remembers and God notices. And after all, that's really all that really counts. Or we may say, "Well, life isn't fair because after all, you have to understand that I have a set of circumstances that you'll just have to excuse me when I sin because I just can't help myself." No, to the contrary. In the book of 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and the 13th verse, Paul says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." Now, if it were Satan, he wouldn't put a limit on the temptation. But Paul says God is. That God is faithful. And that God will not allow us to be tempted beyond what we are able. And with the temptation, He will also provide a way of escape. I can always make the right choice. And when I sin, much of the time it is because I have chosen to take the wrong path. We say life isn't fair, but God is fair. And He says all of these temptations are common to man. And God will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the way of escape, with the temptation, give a way of escape that you might be able to bear it. We say life isn't fair, but God is fair, for God rewards according to ability. In the book of Matthew, the 25th chapter, there is several parables, and one of them is the one that is recorded in the 14th verse, the parable of the talents. To one God gave five, to one He gave two, to another one. The text says, each according to his ability. The point is that God does not expect more of us than what we can handle. Each according to his ability. And when God rewarded the three, to the two men, or to the one to whom He gave five and to the other to whom He gave two, it says in verse 20, "So he received five talents, came and brought five other talents, saying, 'Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He would say the same to the one to whom he gave 2. And had the one to whom he gave 1 done the same thing, had he been faithful, God would have said the very same thing. Same Lord, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord. The fact is that sometimes preachers sit around and we talk about the fact that, well, here's this fella who's, you know, a silver-tongued orator, and he's working with a local church that we might call a tub of butter. It just seemed like everything going great. And yet you have another fellow who may be somewhat tongue-tied. He may be working a rather difficult field. But both love the Lord. Both love people. Both are devoted to the cause of Christ. Both devoted to truth. And both have the same judge. And on the judgment day, God will say to both of them, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Now, my stepfather would have told you when he was alive that you didn't want him leading singing. He would have, I'm sure, if he'd have been the only one available. But the fact is that George Vandiver couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, as he would tell you. But I'll tell you what he could do. He never met a stranger. And a local church understood that and recognized where they were worshiping. And they said, George, we want you in the foyer when services are over, greeting the visitors. You have a talent, and you need to use it. Now, that wouldn't be true of me, but that was true of George. The fact is that there was an acknowledgement of a talent, a gift to be used. And the fact is that we all have a gift. We all have something that we can do. There is all of us have some kind of ministry or something that we can get involved in. And our responsibility is to remember that we face the same judge on the judgment day, and that we need to take the opportunities that are given to us as well as the gifts that we have and use them with all of our might to the glory and honor of God. No, life isn't fair. But God is, and God rewards according to ability. Life isn't fair, but God accepts according to what you have. Now, I'm not sure that any of us, if we were true, would say that we have reached our full potential here. But in the book of 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, when Paul is trying to encourage the Corinthian brethren to become involved in this collection for needy saints, Paul would make this observation in chapter 8 of 2 Corinthians and verse 12. 2 Corinthians 8 and 12. For if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has, and not according to what he does not have. And someone would say, but what about those poor Macedonians? Would anybody notice them? God did. In fact, he would use the poor Macedonians as an inspiration to the Corinthian brethren to get involved in this collection. And he would say in the second verse that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. They were pleading with us to be involved. The poor Macedonians. Nobody notices, but God notices. And God, He notices the small things. Even the small things. The handshake. The card. The smile. The touch. The invitation to a worship or the invitation to a Bible study. God notices those things. In fact, you probably heard the story, if I can get it right, for want of a nail. for want of a nail, the horse was lost. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. And for want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the messenger was lost. For want of a messenger, the message was lost. And for want of a message, the battle was lost. One little nail exerting all that influence. Every one of us, we have a great potential. You never know. You never know what you can do with just one small incident. Maybe it's an example on the job of living day after day after day of a person of integrity, a person of high moral standard, of a person who has obviously made choices that are far different from the world. No, life isn't fair, but God is. And God will reward according to ability, and He will reward according to what you have, but not according to what you don't have. In fact, life isn't fair, but God judges fairly and impartially. In fact, in the book of Romans, the second chapter, the Apostle Paul reminds us of that in Romans chapter 2. Paul says in Romans, the second chapter, beginning with verse 5, "But in accordance with your hardness and impenitent heart, you are treasuring up for yourself wrath in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render to each according to his deeds. Eternal life to those who by patient continuance in doing good seek for glory, honor, and immortality. But to those who are self-seeking and do not obey the truth but obey unrighteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish on every soul of man who does evil, of the Jew first and also the Greek, but glory, honor, and peace to everyone who works what is good, to the Jew first and also the Greek, for there is no partiality with God." It doesn't matter what your social status. It doesn't matter what your economic status is. As I stated last night, the only thing that really counts is whether or not you're right with God. In fact, I would suggest to you that C.S. Lewis has said with regard to mankind, there are two kinds of individuals in this world. He says they're either everlasting splendors or eternal horrors. Only two kinds of people. Saved and lost. And when we face the judge, He will judge fairly. And He will judge impartially. And it will not be based upon your social status, but it will be based upon the choice that you have made in our life, you and I have made in our life, of whether or not we have devoted our life to selfishness and self-seeking. And therefore, He says, for them is indignation and wrath. Or whether or not we have sought to serve God, striving to serve Him, for Him to whom He says will be immortality, glory and honor and immortality to those who have chosen to serve the Lord. No, life isn't fair, but thankfully we serve a God that is fair. I have a friend of mine whose wedding I did about 18 or 20 years ago. And his wife has walked out on the marriage and now struggling to get custody of the children. But that boy has remained faithful. And he may not have everything that he wanted in this world, at least for now. But he has everything that counts. He has a relationship with God. And while life may not be fair, we can be thankful that we serve a fair and impartial judge. And thus Solomon would come to his conclusion. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all, or the whole duty of man. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. If we look at life's inequities and we stop there, we get a little discouraged. But when we look everywhere and understand that we serve a righteous and just God, and we understand our purpose, we can be devoted to that and know that God will truly reward according to the things that we have done and our service to Him. And it doesn't matter what your calling in life, whether it is to change the diapers every day on your kids, or the CEO of a corporation, or a banker, or a doctor, or a school teacher, or digging ditches. I would suggest to you that without God, all of those things are just a job. But thankfully with God, He gives us a purpose, and He gives us a reason to live. Therefore, your daily assignment and mine is to begin the day with a prayer and to say, God, help me to use this day to Your glory and to Your honor and to Your praise. That's our daily assignment. And it's wonderful to be a child of God and to have that purpose and that reason to live. Therefore, we understand that in Christ are all spiritual blessings. And the way that we come to that relationship, as we stated last night, is to believe in Him based upon that faith, to give our life to Him, to confess Him as Lord and Master, and confess that before the world that He is the Christ, the Son of God, to be buried with Him in baptism and raised to walk in newness of life, that sin might be forgiven. And then after that, to remain in that relationship, to remain faithful and to give our life to Him. I don't know where you are today in that step and process, but if there's something that we can do today to help you to get your life right with God, whatever your need may be, we certainly would welcome an opportunity to assist. We invite you to come as we stand and sing the song selected.